Now the U.S. Supreme Court ruled at the end of last month that a Colorado-based website designer could deny her services to same-sex couples seeking a wedding website. The designer said her religious beliefs opposed same-sex marriage. The court's majority ruled that her work is a form of free speech and that Colorado anti-discrimination laws can't force her into speech that would, quote, defy her conscience about a matter of major significance. The majority opinion in the case said that the same protections would apply to other businesses that provide a service involving a form of speech or expression. Opponents say that the ruling will embolden other businesses to discriminate against LGBT community members and claim free speech protections. The case has raised big questions about who and what the First Amendment protects and where the line is between free speech and discrimination. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this Supreme Court case? What do you make of the ruling? Do you think they got it right? What questions do you have about this case, the First Amendment, discrimination laws? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Craig Conneth is the Martha Lubin Karsh and Bruce A. Karsh Bicentennial Professor of Law at the University of Virginia, where he studies health law, constitutional law, and LGBT rights. He was formerly the Deputy Solicitor General for the state of California. Craig, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me here, Rob.
Now, I gave a very short summary of this case, cases that go to the Supreme Court. There's a lot of tangles and loops leading along the way. Can you give us some of the background of what brought this to the nation's highest court?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, a few years ago, a graphic designer, Laurie Smith, who built websites but did not build wedding websites, said that she wanted to build wedding websites, but she also wanted to post a notice saying that she would not make wedding websites for same-sex couples. She filed a case in district court. The district court said, well, you've got to actually have a case for it. Someone has to come to you, say that they want a wedding website. You have to be prosecuted in some way. There has to be a case where you are somehow being targeted for not serving same-sex couples. So you basically lose on what lawyers call standing. You have no standing to bring the case until you actually suffer some kind of burden. In the 10th Circuit, the Court of Appeals held, well, actually, she does have standing. She can bring the case because there's a good chance she will be prosecuted because the law prevents her from posting that she won't serve same-sex couples, but that she loses on the merits, that actually the law can require her to serve same-sex couples for their wedding websites on an equal basis as different-sex couples. And then finally, she asked the Supreme Court to review the case, and the Supreme Court basically held, as you said, that she had a First Amendment right to violate the Colorado anti-discrimination law in question here.
What kind of precedent do you think this case sets now for, I mean, this one is specific to a website designer who's going to do wedding websites. What other things could this ruling open the door to?
So there are two possible ways this case may go, right? So one way in which some commentators have treated this case is that it's very narrow. What the Colorado Attorney General did in the lower courts is that they agreed that building a website is expressive speech, basically. And so right in the first couple of pages of the opinion, Justice Gorsuch, who's writing for the court, says the parties agreed that this is protected speech, and so therefore our ruling rests on that fact. In other cases, the parties may not agree that the speech is actually protected. So there was a prior case involving a baker, as you may recall, and the baker said baking a cake is a form of expression and should be protected. And so you can sort of see people disputing what exactly is protected speech or not. If the ruling is narrow, then we may only see this play a role when it comes to sort of building a website or printing wedding invitations or maybe photography, but, you know, potentially not much further. People like me who are maybe a little more pessimistic as you look at the way the Supreme Court's behaved over the last few years think that this is going to sweep more broadly, that you are going to have florists and bakers and others also say, well, this is expression, and lower courts agreeing with them. But that has to do with what people are doing, making cakes, etc. The second question is, whom will they be able to discriminate against? So here we're talking about same-sex couples, same-sex weddings. But really, there's nothing in the opinion that prevents someone from coming in tomorrow and saying, well, I object to interracial weddings. And while I have nothing against black people, I object to them marrying white people. And so I will not make a wedding website for interracial weddings. So this has the potential to sweep quite broadly. Even beyond discrimination, this has the potential to, you know, so someone believes that they have to, you know, you've got to build a website in complying with various other laws or regulations, or you've got to, you know, prepare documents that comply with, you know, reports that are set by safety agencies that the state says, and an organization comes in and says, well, actually, this violates our First Amendment rights. And it's quite unclear what courts will do, because if this is expressive speech, then the limit is very, very porous.
Now, we've looked at the majority opinion here saying, in effect, hey, we think this Colorado law would be compelling this person to make speech that they creative expression that they don't agree with. The dissent here made the case that the three justices who voted against this ruling said you're legalizing discrimination against certain people who are doing something legal, getting married. Could you talk a little more about what we heard from the three justices who dissented from the opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that there were, you know, various elements to this, but I think the key point for me that I took away was the dissent saying, look, our previous precedent. So there is an important precedent here where you have law schools, you know, back when the military discriminated against people. A law school said we don't want the military recruiting on our campuses because that basically forces us into, you know, circulating emails on behalf of the military who are recruiting, and we are basically then engaging in speech that we don't want to engage in on behalf of an anti-gay organization, that is the U.S. military at that point. And the Supreme Court said, well, it's not your speech, it's the U.S. military speech. And so similarly, the dissent relied on that and said, look, in this case, Lori Smith is not speaking on behalf of herself. She's speaking on behalf of the couple that's getting married. And you can see this analogy in other contexts, right? So the spokesperson for the White House isn't speaking on behalf of him or herself. He or she is speaking on behalf of the White House. So similarly here, it is not the speech of the designer, and therefore she does not get to claim First Amendment protections. I think more broadly, though, it's generally been accepted that these kinds of public accommodation laws serve important government interests. And so even if they incidentally burden the speech of certain groups or certain organizations, the importance of people being able to go into stores, go into hospitals, go into institutions where they can feel safe and get served, that's generally been acknowledged to be an important enough interest that that the incidental burdens of speech have been accepted. And the Supreme Court is undoing that framework.
Talking to Craig Conneth with the law school at the University of Virginia, looking at this U.S. Supreme Court ruling saying a web designer could start a business selling wedding websites, creating wedding websites, and could say, hey, yeah, only opposite-sex couples, only men and women, no same-sex couples. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your reactions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Randy is with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Good afternoon. Obviously, this is the wedding cake case redo, and before a radically different Supreme Court. What has really disturbed me, though, is learning that apparently they completely fabricated any defendants in the case. In other words, nobody had approached the plaintiff to ask for a wedding page, or if they had, it was fraudulent. But either way, it's entirely possible, maybe probable, that the plaintiff swore to this under oath.
Randy, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call, Randy. Craig, Randy referred to, I think the original reporting was from the New Republic, who tracked down In an earlier part of this case, the plaintiff had said, hey, I received via my web thing a request from a same-sex couple. The New Republic tracked it down with identifying information. Doesn't appear that that happened. That part was discarded from the case along the way. A lot of people made a lot of it. How big a deal is that?
You know, to be honest, it's not really that big a deal from a legal perspective. I mean, I think that from a political and a political perspective, and just, you know, trying to get a sense of how these cases are manufactured and what anti-LGBT rights advocates are doing, I think it's important to see what methods are being deployed. But from the legal perspective here, it doesn't make much of a difference because the courts basically said, you know, look, she wants to post this notice that she won't serve same-sex couples. And her desire to post the notice is they portrayed it, and I believe is independent of whether she was, you know, she was asked to make a website for the same-sex couples. So from a legal perspective, it doesn't play that much of a role.
Thanks for the call, Randy. But how about you touched on this earlier, Craig? The standing ruling. Some observers said, "Hey, wait a minute. You know, she should have started the wedding website." You mentioned this earlier. Been challenged, been targeted under this law. Then there's a case here. There is still some argument out there, I think, about standing. Is that right?
Yeah, to my mind, there is, because she has to show that there is some kind of clear danger that the law will be enforced against her. And there really, you know, there really wasn't. I mean, the Supreme Court said, well, the Colorado Attorney General hasn't disavowed. They haven't said that they will not prosecute her. I think it's very strange to ask and, you know, ask a public entity to do that. But if you look at the Supreme Court's past cases, I mean, you have people who've been stopped and frisked by the police, you know, a hundred times or more within a couple of months, and the Supreme Court has said, "Oh, you don't have standing to come sue the police for prospective, stops and frisks." But in this case, you have someone, who wants to post something that is true, but it really does seem that that this stretches standing doctrine, beyond anything that we've seen before.
Thanks again for that call, Randy. We're talking to University of Virginia Law Professor Craig Conneth about the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that allowed a website designer to deny services to same-sex couples seeking wedding websites because of her religious beliefs. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of that decision? The right call, the wrong call? What other creative type jobs do you think should be covered under this ruling, should be able to deny services to someone based on beliefs? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Craig Conneth, law professor and LGBT rights expert from the University of Virginia. And we're looking at a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court that allowed a Colorado website designer to say she would deny services to same-sex couples seeking a wedding website, citing religious objections. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to that ruling, your questions about it. Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm disturbed by this decision also. Number one, as I remember, New York State law, I just moved from there recently. Their actual marriage law for gay couples was a civil union law. In other words, they provided, you know, covered mercy issues like visiting in the hospital and contact, you know, institutional issues. For the Catholic Church, marriage is a sacrament. So I think you really have to kind of maybe dig deeper into any state differences between civil union versus marriage.
Okay, I gotcha. And Craig, so before that big Supreme Court ruling legalized same-sex marriage nationwide, this was a debate in a lot of states, you know, full marriage equality, civil unions as an alternative for same-sex couples. I believe that whole civil union thing is just, under the latest from the Supreme Court, is not a part of the story anymore. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's really not part of the story anymore, because after 2015, marriage equality was mandated across the nation. So that really doesn't sort of become part of the conversation today.
Okay, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Dan in Madison. Dan, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
I just wanted to say that I think things have to be kept in perspective, that this is not a poor person who is trying to run a small business, because I know this for a fact, because to have these types of lawsuits costs many, many hundreds, if not millions of dollars. So somebody who's trying to start a business running a website, it's not funding this, number one. And number two, any rational business person that's trying to start a business would never turn away any type of couple who's going to pay for you to do a website, especially when you're starting out. So this is just part of the cultural wars and the war on gay people, which is really kind of a sad state of affairs. That's really all I had to say.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. And Craig, there were national groups involved in this that, as Dan was suggesting, kind of viewed this as a test case that they were out looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is clearly a case that was sought out. One of the issues in the cake case that went up to the Supreme Court that one of the previous callers and I alluded to earlier was whether baking a cake really constituted expression. And during the oral argument in that case, Justice Kagan raised that question. She said, you know, what becomes speech next? I mean, does a fancy restaurant menu that's made by a Michelin-starred chef, does that become speech? What about a makeup artist? As she said at oral argument, artist is in the name of makeup artist. So does that become speech? So I think that, you know, many of the folks who wanted to target these anti-discrimination laws and who wanted to target equality for same-sex couples, they sort of went around looking for cases that would be better. Now, some people have accused the lawyers here of manufacturing the case. Some people have suggested that they manufactured the request that turned out to be fake that was sent to Lori Smith, the website designer in this case. And then, as you said, the New Republic found out that the request was fake. There's no evidence that they manufactured it, but basically, I think that this case was the sort of ideal case for them. And then, of course, the fact got stipulated that this is expressive speech, that, you know, that made it even better. But beyond that, I think that this becomes the wedge in the door, right? Because you've got a website designer. The next time you'll have a photographer, right? And then you can just sort of keep going, you know, a floral designer, you know, and you can just keep going thinking about, you know, more and more attenuated ways to express yourself and opening the doors, you know, wider and wider to discrimination.
Dan, thanks for that call. Keith joins us now in Spring Green. Keith, hi.
Yes, thank you. It's my understanding that personal bias would be discrimination, that religious belief would be free speech. I'm wondering if the legal system and the court, if they have any sort of questions or filter to decide whether somebody really has that religious belief or whether they just take the person's word.
Interesting, Keith. Thanks for the call. Craig, is there a way that the court was trying to split that hair between bias versus genuine religious belief?
Not at all. I mean, I think that that's a really interesting question, because I think that, you know, you kind of see the court in various other cases trying to figure out, when it comes to other groups, you know, was this person really discriminated against because, you know, they're black or because, you know, they're gay, etc. But here, and especially in the cake shop case, the court's really open to claims that someone's being discriminated against because of their religion. Now, I want to make it clear that this case is a free speech case, mm-hmm. right? But in all of these cases, when they're filed in district court, there's always this religion element. There's always a free exercise element that the anti-discrimination law is harming them because of their religion, right? And the court's precedent hasn't quite gone far enough to say that you can simply ignore the law because of your religious beliefs, at least when it comes to a state law. So I think that... You do have some religion playing a role, but not explicitly. I just want to take a quick step back, though. So basically, there's a federal statute called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that basically says that when it comes to federal statutes, people have a religious right to disregard certain federal statutes if their religion prohibits them from doing so. And the court's been really sympathetic to those claims. So just recently, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals held that the Title VII, which is the federal anti-discrimination law, has to give way to people's religious beliefs. People can say, I have a religious belief and I can discriminate against whoever I want because of my religious belief. So federal law is already under attack in that way. And I think it's just a matter of time before people sort of turn to state laws and say, well, actually, the Constitution, my free exercise of religion rights under the Constitution allow me to do what I want. And then finally, one last thought is that the court basically takes people at their word, right? So some of you may remember the Hobby Lobby case, which basically prohibited the Obama administration from requiring employers to distribute contraceptives. The employer in that case came in and said, you know, look, we have a religious objection to distributing contraceptives. It violates our religion. And the Supreme Court said, okay, you don't have to. What's interesting is that that same employer used to distribute contraceptives before Obamacare was law. The insurance programs that they signed up to, they distributed contraceptives. Suddenly they decided that it was against their religion, and the Supreme Court did not question that. So yeah, the Supreme Court really allows pretty much free rein when it comes to religious claims. To some degree, I think that's fair, but sometimes it can be quite problematic.
Keith, thanks for that call. And Craig, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
That's Craig Conniff, the Martha Lubin Karsh and Bruce A. Karsh Bicentennial Professor of Law at the University of Virginia, where he studies health law, constitutional law, and LGBT rights. He was with us today to discuss a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. This came out late last month. It allowed a business owner to deny services to same-sex couples over religious views and free speech rights. A lot of big U.S. Supreme Court rulings coming out over that last stretch of their term. Check out the archives at WPR.org for a lot of up-close looks at what went into them, what came out of them, what they mean, and there's still more to come. We're kind of playing catch-up. A lot came out over that last couple of weeks.